Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your one-day home of fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever from North America, Jeff Rimebold. And Jeff, I made it back in one piece.
That's good. I was a little worried about you, but hey, a stellar athlete like you on the slopes, it's just a natural.
Yeah, if you go slow enough, it's impossible to fall down is how I figured that out. Although I had one fall in 6 days, so I'm pretty proud of that. It was a pretty decent effort, I think. So it was good though. I spent half the time chasing my kids around the slopes who have literally no fear and trying to get them to turn and stuff like that. So lots of fun, but lots to talk about in the NFL. As you always say, Jeff, there is no off season, and I guess we're getting into the business of the business. So we saw Jared Cook, Chris Long, James Laurinaitis all cut by the LA Rams. The New York Jets cut Antonio Cromartie. DeMarcus Ware might need to take a pay cut or get cut by the Denver Broncos. And I saw that Joe Flacco's having a meeting with the Ravens to renegotiate his contract. So this is all the kind of stuff that teams do as they try and, you know, negotiate that salary cap and get ready for the start of the new league year on March the 9th.
Yeah, and it's the players too. You know, you look at Alex Mack in Cleveland. We're going to talk about Cleveland today. May I opt out of his deal so that you know, he gives him the freedom to go to free agency and test the waters. Guy 30 years old, committed to winning. Do you stay in Cleveland? And you know, again, now the Browns are going to have to convince an all-pro player to stay in town, you know, that they and that they have a plan going forward. So this is a really interesting time of year for everybody that follows the NFL.
We've got the NFL Combine coming up as well, February 23rd to the 29th. Before we get to that, what about Laurinaitis and Long, Jeff? The Laurinaitis one surprised me a little bit. I thought he was that defensive linchpin for them, but it looks like they're going to move Alec Ogletree into the middle. Laurinaitis was pretty realistic about the whole thing. I said, well, you know, it's the nature of the business, and I didn't see it coming, but I can understand that they want to move Ogletree into my spot. But I thought he was pretty firmly set there with the Rams.
Well, you know, here's the deal in that one, I think, you know, is that they want to get more athletic. So Ogletree represents that to him. He's, you know, in the program. You look at a guy like Laurinaitis, who is a very good football player, but makes a lot of money. And, you know, this is that thing we talk about all the time, is that at some point, your production and your dollars, if your dollars are higher than your production, they feel they're going to move, you know, a different direction and use those dollars in other places, particularly a team like the Rams that has so many needs. You know, they just, you know, have to make sometimes those tough calls. Laurinaitis is going to end up someplace. And, you know, for him, it may be a good situation, too, because he may have an opportunity to go to a contender, you know, at this point in his career and you know, compete for what everybody wants to compete for, which is that Super Bowl championship.
Yeah, I guess, Jeff, if you're the Rams, you know you're good on defense already and you can move somebody else into that middle linebacker spot. Do you clear that cap room so you can get a stellar wide receiver or another running back or go out and get yourself Kirk Cousins? I mean, this is where you have to look at it and say, well, we're already pretty decent on that side of the ball, but we need a lot of help on the other side.
I really wish I could take the fans inside, you know, for example, our offices or any of the offices that are right now in pro football, because there's a, you know, it's basically like a strategy session going on where you look at your, you know, you look at your assets and you look at your liabilities and you look at your cap space and you look at, you know, where you need to improve your football team. And then you try and juggle those things. Where can I create, as you said, as you just mentioned, where can I create cap space? Where can I create money to go out and sign a particular free agent that you know is going to cost you a certain amount of money? Or where do you create a roster spot for a young player that you feel like, looking at your draft spot, that you're going to be in a position to draft? So all of these things are really critical because, you know, it's not like your father's NFL. You know, it's not like it used to be. It's a constantly fluid situation, and you're always working against the salary cap and the free agency issues.
Well, we're going to start to look and examine some of the teams around the NFL with our State of the Franchise series. We like to bring this to you during the off-season as we lead up to the NFL draft. So a few key dates for you for the off-season. March the 1st is when the teams have to announce the players they're going to franchise tag. Each team can have one franchise player, which means they keep a Von Miller in the house if you're the Denver Broncos, for example. March the 9th is when free agency begins. Always an exciting time for fans and for teams to build their new rosters for 2016. And the NFL draft is in Chicago, April 28th to the 30th. Before we kick off our state of the franchise, we're going to look today at Tennessee, Cleveland and San Diego. Just one other bit of news, Jeff, I wanted to touch on. This happened while I was away, but Jared Allen literally rode off into the sunset. There was no sunset, but he rode off anyway. 12 years in the NFL, 136 sacks, and fittingly, he ends his career playing in a Super Bowl, even though he didn't win it with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I tell you what, that was such a poignant little production that he made, you know, where he's sitting on horseback and up in Wyoming or Idaho or wherever he was, you know, all the snow around him and his cowboy hat on and that big leather jacket. He looked like he should have been doing Marlboro commercials and rides off into what wasn't the sunset. So it's kind of a little bit like his Super Bowl. It was, you know, really nice, but not as nice as he wanted it to be. But what a great career and what a fun guy to be around, and a guy that was always open to the media, a guy that was honest with people, was, you know, accessible, and you know, again, the NFL needs guys like that, and I'm going to be sad to see him go.
Yeah, he was a character. Great to be around, as you mentioned. Really good guy. I worked with him ahead of the 2013 International Series game. He came over as part of the PR trip in the summer, and they lost his luggage, Jeff. So the first thing we're doing is out of Wembley Stadium, and he's got on these kind of three-quarter length shorts, which was all he could buy, but they were skin tight. I mean, seriously skin tight. And he was like, look at me, man. Look at the state of me. The next night, we were doing a fan night up in Birmingham. And on the way back, it was literally a two-hour bus journey. We've made that journey not so long ago. But it was on a bus with Jared Allen just basically holding court, telling stories. It was one of the great characters of the game. And actually, during his heyday, Jeff, his numbers, pass rushing wise, you know, they stand up to the likes of Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White. You know, if you put together a 4 or 5 year span in the middle of his career, and I mean, 136 sacks anyway is not to be sniffed at, but he was one of the all time best, you know, at the height of his game.
Yeah, he was a kid, you know, that came out of Idaho State, was overlooked in recruiting, went to Idaho State, which is not a big school, a 1AA school. And the Chiefs took a flyer on him because of Jim Kreiner, actually.
Right.
Because Jim was living in Montana at the time and had saw the kid play a number of times because Idaho State's in that same conference with Montana, Montana State, and Boise and those people at that time, and really liked him and said, hey, he told Carl Peterson that there's a tall, skinny pass rusher up at Idaho State that's, you know, got a great first step and kind of, you know, it's interesting, Neil, when you remember him as a player, he just kind of slithered off guys. He really didn't have what you'd call pass rush moves per se.
No.
He just had a way of getting off bodies and getting to the quarterback. So the Chiefs take him and he comes into the league and really, you know, from the very start, really set the league on fire. My favorite Jared Allen deal was, you know, if you remember his signature sack dance, if you will,
yes,
was a rodeo cowboy move where he would get on his knee and fake like he was putting a rope around a calf steer wrestling is what it's called,
yeah.
Right? And then he raise your hand when you're done at time, right? Well, the NFL started to fine him for that dance, and he asked why, and he said because you put your knee on the ground. So from that day forward, he would put his knee like 2 inches away from the ground just to get the NFL's goat and do his little cowboy routine on the ground. But that's the kind of guy he was. He was going to have fun no matter what.
Yeah, he does so much great work as well with the wounded veterans in the United States. His Wounded Warriors charity is going from strength to strength. I know each year, Jeff, he holds this, like so many players, he holds a golf tournament to raise money for these wounded veterans. But Of course, it's Jared Allen, so he does it a little bit differently. So they play at night. So it's everyone wears night vision goggles. They have balls that they're trying to track in the middle of the night. And then when they get to the ninth hole, there's one of these huge slip and slide mats. So everyone literally just slides hundreds of feet and it's covered in water and foam. And then they get back up, put the night goggles on, and on they go to play the rest of their round. That kind of sums up Jared Allen. He will be missed. And I'm sure he's going to pop up. Well, I don't know if he'll pop up, actually. I was thinking he might pop up in the media from time to time. But, Jeff, he seems quite happy in the wilds as he rides off on his horse.
You know, he really is that guy. You know, he's a guy that really doesn't care what you think and really doesn't care how you think he lives his life, whether it's right or wrong or whatever. Mm. And he's very, very active. The thing that I like about him is there are a lot of guys in the NFL, really way more than we probably should talk about, I mean, or that we do talk about and we should talk about, that do great things in the community. But he's not only a spokesman. He gets out and he's hands-on with these veterans. Mm-hmm. And he's... You know, he's befriended a number of them, and that's, you know, just he does everything from his heart. That's the way he played the game. You know, a guy goes out and plays in the Super Bowl with a broken foot. I mean, he's a guy that's just going to do everything intensely and everything from his heart and everything as if tomorrow wasn't promised to you. And I love the guy for that.
Yep, me too. Hear, hear. Before we move on to our state of the franchise, Jeff, just we're going to touch a little bit on the combine. Obviously, the we've talked in previous podcasts about the combine. It's a testing ground. It's a meat market. It's not only a chance to test the players physically, but they get tested mentally. They sit through interviews. It's a place where the NFL comes together to evaluate the top college prospects. And I just wanted to get you to give, if we've got new listeners along the way, paint a bit of a picture of what the combine is like. I know you've been there a few times. But also, we can talk a little bit, Jeff, about... I saw this week that Ole Miss wide receiver Laquon Treadwell is not going to run at the combine. And there's always this negative when you don't work out for the NFL coaches. But Bill Belichick said, actually, recently, that players spend too much time training for the combine and not for football. I mean, this is... You've got to have that balancing act, haven't you, as you try and evaluate these players, not to forget the football tape, you know, and it's not just about running a straight line over 40 yards.
Yeah, I think you know Belichick oftentimes really is a bell of reason in the National Football League. What happens now, Neil, and you know this, that if you're Laquon Treadwell or you're any of these young guys that look to go high in the draft, you're going to go all of the months prior to the combine. As soon as you finish your college season, you begin to train for the combine itself, for the events in the combine, for the 40, you work on your start, you work on your running form, you work on all of those things, for the, you know, the, what we call the pro shuttle, the 5-10-5, for the 60-yard shuttle, for the L drill, for all of the position-specific combine drills that you'll do for the coaches. And what Belichick's point is that you're wasting months that you should be spending getting better as a football player, because ultimately when you go to training camp, you're going to have to play football, not, you know, do the 40-yard dash or do the L drill or the pro shuttle or any of those things. And that makes sense to me. But the reality of it is, too, for the athletes, is your combine showing can make a difference in where you get drafted. And, you know, we talk all the time. You know, you go back to a guy named Mark Mamula, who the Eagles took out of Boston College in the first round because he blew up the combine. And the guy never was much of a player in the National Football League, but he was, you know, a workout warrior is what we call him. And, you know, looked great in his underwear and, you know, ran a great 40 and bench the, you know, 225, 30-something. I mean, he did all the testing well, but he just wasn't a football player. So you got to blend the tape that you see, because the tape never lies, with what you get at the combine. To me, the reason guys like Belichick and some of the other guys go is not so much for the, you know, the quote athletic drills. It's to see how the players respond to the competitive environment, see how they respond to, you know, maybe not doing well in a drill, you know, dropping a ball in a pass drill or whatever. see how they respond to their teammates. Do they take coaching? All those things that you can't measure on tape.
And I think they try and wear them out, Jeff, because of that. I remember seeing the schedule for some of these players, and they're meeting team after team after team. They start, sometimes at 6 in the morning. They go until after midnight, and there's everything going on. And I think that's part of trying to just push their buttons and test them, because the psychological part is important, isn't it? I know from a couple of years ago, Cordarrelle Patterson got a bit of a bad rap from the combine because he would sit texting on his phone while he was meeting with teams. Well, look at Patterson. He's not really worked out, and there's been maturity questions with him. Coming out of 2 years ago, there were still teams that were worried about Johnny Manziel, and a couple actually went on record as saying, this guy could be the next Ryan Leaf if he doesn't straighten up. Well, look at what's happened with Johnny Manziel. So I think they try and push all these buttons for the players, run them into the ground. The more ways you can test them, the more ways you can see how they respond.
Well, I'll give you an example for what you're talking about, and you're exactly correct. You know, teams will bring in psychologists to sit in those interviews and watch a player's body language because they believe they can get insights into the player's psychological makeup during that interview process. Does the kid sit up straight? Does he pay attention? Does he look you in the eye? Does he, all of the things that you would do almost to the point of, a lie detector test to see how the player responds to questions. Because they're going to ask you, let's say, for example, I'm interviewing you. You're a tight end. You come into the interview process. I know, for example, that you've had unpaid parking tickets in college, and you had to pay traffic fines at your university. I will already know the answers to all the questions, but I'm going to ask you to see if you'll be honest about those realities.
Yeah.
Let's say you've gotten arrested for smoking marijuana or whatever it is, right? I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to test you to see, first of all, are you honest? Do you own up? Are you accountable? All of those things. Then additionally, Neil, there'll be a segment of it where I may just put you on the board and say, okay, Neil, diagram to me your favorite pass route.
Yeah.
Just to see how much football knowledge, football information you have.
Yeah. Just, you want to keep working them mentally, right?
Oh, it's all about that. You put them under stress. You put them under strain. You put them, the drills are not designed to tax them physically, like to wear them out. You'll do that at pro day when you have them in an individual workout. But the mental aspect, to push them, to see if they stay on time. Because I'm going to tell you something, like you said, Neil, and you're exactly correct. That schedule that those kids are on is incredible. From early in the morning until late at night, they are going, and they are, it's in 5-minute blocks, and you better be here, and you better be where you're supposed to be. So you look for those kinks in a kid's armor. Like you said, Cordarrelle Patterson is a perfect example of that. Didn't pay attention in his interviews, texting when he's being talked to by general managers, late for, position drills, all that kind of stuff tells you that those are all red flags about a player. And, when you take a guy like that, then you get exactly what you take.
Absolutely. I am going to be honest with you, Jeff. I do have 3 points on my driving license for speeding. So honesty is the best policy. You're right, Coach.
Yeah, there's no question. Because if you think they don't know the answer, if you think they don't know everything that's going on, that's what shocks me about, everybody's surprised in Cleveland about the Manziel deal.
Yeah.
Those warning signs were there way before he got to Cleveland.
Right.
And they took, and the same thing, we just saw it happen this weekend in Dallas with Gregory. He had substance abuse issues at Nebraska. And the Cowboys took a chance on him. And, now they're going to lose him for 4 games next year because he can't stay clean. When you draft guys with those kinds of histories, you're going to get that. That's going to come to your team, and you better be ready to deal with it or suffer the consequences.
Absolutely. So the NFL Combine is going to run from February 23rd to 29th. You can catch all of that on NFL.com, and there'll be bits and pieces on NFLUK.com as well. Let's start our State of the Franchise series then, and we'll look at the Tennessee Titans first. They went 3-13 in 2015, and they're owners of the first pick in the 2016 draft. I'll just give you the tail of the tape on the Titans, then open it up to you, Jeff. So offense was ranked 30th in the NFL. Passing attack was 25th. Rushing was 25th. They were 28th in scoring. Defense was a little bit better, ranked 21st, 26th against the pass, 15th against the rush. We like to look at the salary cap space because that's important as we go into the offseason. The Titans are 7th best in terms of salary cap space. It's estimated between $49 and $50 million to spend. It will fluctuate once they settle on the cap. We'll know a bit more about exactly what they've got to spend. But they had a 1-6 start. They saw Tennessee fire Ken Wisenhunt. So they won that season opener. Then they lost 6 in a row. They beat New Orleans in overtime. Then they had 3 more losses. They beat Jacksonville 42-39. Then lost their final 4. Normally, Jeff, when we start with these state of the franchise teams, the first 3, they normally all need a quarterback. These don't, do they? They've got their quarterback in Marcus Mariota.
I think so. You know, you look at the things that he did. You know, 4 touchdown passes in a game, first time ever done, I think, by a rookie. I mean, he did. Marcus, particularly early in the year, had, I thought, a pretty good year. Now, again, you got to understand, they didn't ask him to do a tremendous amount.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was a little bit concerning to me, Marcus is a guy who can get away from trouble, you know, in terms of being able to get away from the rush. But, you know, they gave up 57 sacks last year.
Most in the 57 NFL.
57 sacks, led the National Football League. So that tells you there's some problems there. How much of it is his youth and, you know, not knowing where to go with the ball fast, or how much of it is scheme, or how much of it is just poor offensive line play? I think that's right now what Mike Mularkey is got to go through and find out. Now, here's when you look at the Titans, Mularkey comes in there, veteran coach. A lot of people felt, and I know, you know, when you talk to guys around Jacksonville, they felt that he got kind of a little bit of a shaft in Jacksonville. They liked him. Mark Brunell loves him and said thought he was really had a plan and an approach in Jacksonville that would work. Only got one season there, and now he's going to get a second chance. He goes out and he hires Terry Rubisky as his offensive coordinator. Longtime NFL assistant, you know, really been around some good offenses. And he got Dick LeBeau to stay in, you know, for a little bit longer now. So he's got good veteran coordinators, which I think is good. They got a young roster. They're building for the long haul. I think 3 key guys when you look at this franchise, Neil, and they're all on offense.
Yep.
Mariota, as you mentioned it, and again, you're exactly right. You've got to start with quarterback. Mariota is good enough. Then you've got a young receiver in Dorial Green-Beckham who showed flashes of greatness. And then David Cobb at running back. So those 3 positions you feel good about. Now, when you look at what they need, obviously they're not good depth-wise at receiver. Offensive line, you know, I think particularly inside is where the problems are. And, you know, when you look at that 57 sacks, you know you got issues.
Mm.
And then I think from a running back standpoint, they could use a situational back. You know, one of those guys that can come in on third down and, you know, you can isolate him against linebackers, move him out, play him wide, all that stuff. And those kind of guys are out there. I think that's what they're looking for in terms of improving their football team right away.
Yeah.
They're going to have the first pick in the draft, right? Now, my question to you is, if you're Tennessee, do you use that first pick, or do you trade and try and get more picks because you have multiple needs?
I would, well, if I'm Tennessee, and I would try and trade it, Jeff, but I don't think you're going to find a dance partner, because I'm not sure what you're looking at then is a partner who is going to trade up to get ahead of Cleveland to take Jared Goff, for example. And do we have teams out there that are willing to give up what the Redskins gave up to the Rams a few years ago? I'm not sure this draft has that kind of star power. I mean, I think in theory that makes sense, and because as you say, you've just listed it there. Tennessee could use another wide receiver. They could use if they go Laramie Tunsil, they've got a left tackle. They can move Taylor Luan over to the right side. They need a center. They need guard help a little bit. There's a number of places. Safety now with Michael Griffin just been cut by the team. They need more at cornerback. So there's a whole bunch of, as you would expect with a team this far down the NFL rankings, there are a whole bunch of needs, but I don't think they'll find a dance partner. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really going to be interesting to see, because you mentioned Goff, and I think that, you know, I watched I've watched the quarterbacks, the three top quarterbacks,
yep.
you know, in this draft. The question will be, how desperate, as you say, how desperate are they? How desperate are, for example, the Cowboys? How
yep.
desperate are the Texans? How desperate are any of those teams that are really in need of a quarterback to step up and take, you know, you know, I watched the guy that strikes me the most is the North Dakota State kid. And I watched him very closely. The thing that the knock that's going to be on him is he didn't play a high level of competition week in and week out. Now, you watch his mechanics. You watch him throw the ball. You wait, watch how the ball comes out of his hand. All of those things. He's big and he's athletic and all of it. Yeah, I think so. I think he's got all the things you're looking for. To me, he would be a perfect pick in Dallas where he can sit behind Romo for a year or two and learn. But, you know, the Cowboys have what? I think the fourth pick, if I'm not mistaken.
They do, yes. Yeah.
Would they be willing to move up, trade the fourth for the first and maybe another pick, second round or whatever? And is that enough for Tennessee? That's what's going to be, you know, Tennessee right now, I'm sure, is letting everybody know that they're taking calls.
Yeah.
If you know, they can put a deal together for that first pick. If not, I agree with you 100%, Neil. Laremy Tunsil's the best player in the draft. The best player in the draft. The left tackle from Ole Miss.
Mm.
Tremendous, tremendous athlete. He has Pro Bowl ability. You know, I never put a kid in the Hall of Fame or hasn't played a down in the NFL. But if you just look at what he can do physically, there's no question. I mean, there's absolutely no question. Now, he comes with some baggage. There's Mississippi's being investigated right now about whether he was recruited illegally or not illegally. He lost some games as a senior because of it. So, you know, there's some stuff there, too. But when you look at him physically, Neil, he is just amazing.
I tell you what, as baggage goes, that I would live with that baggage if it's just about a recruiting violation compared to some of the baggage that these guys come out with.
Yeah, I agree with you. Exactly. At least he's not, you know, hitting somebody in a bar or smoking weed or him that doesn't have any of that stuff on him.
Mike Mularkey did say, Jeff, I know you mentioned David Cobb there, but Mike Mularkey said he wants to find a workhorse. He wants to find a running back that can carry the load and be the bell cow. And if we look actually across the board on this offense, I'm with you. I like Dorial Green Beckham. I thought he flashed real potential. That, you know, that kind of, you know, your ability to throw it up and let him go and win contested catches. But there just weren't enough playmakers across the board with the Titans, and we've said that for a number of years now. So whether it's a third down back who can, you know, make plays in both parts of the game, whether it's another receiver. I like Delanie Walker, Jeff. I think he's one of the better tight ends in the NFL, but there's just not enough around Marcus Mariota at the moment.
Yeah, and I agree. And the thing about Delanie Walker, and I, you know, he's probably flies under the radar, you know, when you start talking about tight ends, because we always go to Gronkowski and we go to all the guys that get all the hype, and, you know, Heath Miller and all those guys. But that guy just makes play after play after play on a bad football team that doesn't get any publicity. The issue with Delanie Walker to me, Neil, is he's 32 years old.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at this point, when will his skill set start to fade away a little bit?
Yeah, and the other tight end really that works alongside him last year was Anthony Fasano, who again has been around a while, so you want to add some youth.
Exactly.
On defense.
So like most I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, you finish off.
Well, you know, it's just exactly like you said. Like most teams that are 3-13, you know, it's not one particular problem, it's a series of issues. And I think frankly those issues transcend the playing surface. They go all the way into the, you know, I mean, they've had a changeover in ownership. Bud Adams died. His daughter now runs the team. You know, they bring in, you know, a new general manager in John Robinson. Now, again, he's a Belichick guy, and Belichick says great things about him. He's a great worker. He's a team guy, intelligent, all the things you want Belichick to say. But the reality of it is, too, you look at the success ratio of Belichick guys, and it's not particularly high. So is he going to be able to be one of the ones that can do more than Scott Pioli did, that can do more than Tommy Dimitroff has done, to do more than, you know, some of the guys that have gone out of the Belichick stable and been good but not, you know, not certainly not Bill Belichick.
No, John Robinson comes in with 12 years of experience with the Patriots. And I read with interest, Jeff, last week, if Titans fans are expecting a big blockbuster trade or expecting them to go after a star wide receiver, he pointed to the Super Bowl and said the team that couldn't protect their quarterback lost, and the team that got after the quarterback won. He said this game was and always will be about the line of scrimmage. So maybe he's going to look to bulk up either side of that. And as we move over to defense, the Titans were pretty pleased with their...
Before you go to that, this is the stuff I love about the offseason, right? Because now when you look at that statement,
yeah,
if you just look at it on its face value, what's he telling you? Well, we're going to take Tunsil with the first pick.
Which
right?
means he's not going to, right?
Yeah, is he saying that to make you want to give him more for Tunsil for the first pick? Right, that's the espionage of this part of the season for the National Football League.
Yes, and we have to work out as reporters when we're being fed good information and when we're being used, used and abused. But they are pleased with their front seven. I think they had linebacker Avery Williamson had 102 tackles. Jarrell Casey is still very good at defensive tackle. He had 7 sacks. From the inside, Brian Arakpo had 7 sacks. They like Daquan Jones, but there's probably more question marks about the secondary, aren't there, Jeff?
Yeah, and you know that's kind of always been, you know, with what they play, with the system that they use. Here's what you need in the secondary: you need corners who can cover, and you need safeties who can tackle.
Yeah,
and if you look at when the Steelers were playing their best football, that was when Ike Taylor was at the prime of his career outside at corner. That's when Polamalu inside was making plays, you know, everywhere from the backfield all the way to the deep third. And that's the kind of situation that you get with Dick's system. And you need those corners outside who can isolate and play, you know, that near man technique that they use so that they can zone blitz. Mm. And right now, that would be an area I think I agree with you. I think they need to improve there, and they need to improve at safety because their best safety is now no longer with them.
Mm. I just mentioned the amount of money they've got to spend, and the free agents that they could potentially lose are defensive tackle Sammy Lee Hill, inside linebacker Zach Brown, corner Cody Sensabaugh, defensive tackle Al Woods, and right tackle Byron Bell actually was moved into the starting lineup last year, struggled a bit actually. But Jeff, it's hard to see how they're going to spend that $50 million because the players like, I don't know, a James Laurinaitis or a Matt Forte have said, well, now I'm at the point of the career when I want to chase a championship. They're not going to Nashville. And I don't know, is this team a sort of destination hotspot, or are they going to struggle to spend that money?
See, that's the problem. That's one of the problems with Tennessee. It's never been a destination free agency spot.
No.
And, you know, say, for example, let's use a hypothetical, right? We talked about Alex Mack at Cleveland, right? He's a Pro Bowl player. He wants to go someplace where he can win. He's 30 years old. He knows his window is starting to close now. Well, he would be a perfect fit in Tennessee because then they could take Tunsil with the first pick, and now you've got, you know, now you've got good tackles and a Pro Bowl center. Well, the reality of it is, if you're going to get Alex Mack to go to Tennessee, you're going to have to overpay to get him because he is basically saying, Ben, nah, maybe the Super Bowl isn't such a big deal to me.
Right.
Right. As opposed to going to another team where, you know, you're banging on the door, you know, and that you're in the playoffs, you're going to be at New England or one of these other teams that is always perennially in the playoffs.
Let's move. Anything else on Tennessee, Jeff, before we move on to the Browns?
I just think that it's going to be really interesting to see with me. And again, I'm going to just say this for all of the teams that we're talking about here in this first day. The biggest issue is continuity and plan and direction and, you know, commitment to that plan, and then really doing a great job of evaluating talent. That's how you turn this thing around, because you've got to get it turned around, you've got to hit on some guys that other guys just miss on, frankly. You know, and you got to get, and I'm going to use a name here, I'm using it because I think it's a guy everybody will recognize. When you talk about a Tom Brady, you got to get a 6th round pick that turns into a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Right?
You got to get that kind of hit when you're trying to improve a team that's as bad as these teams are in terms of multiple needs. And I think that's going to be critical.
All right, so this is not a very perfect segue then, because you just talked about a sense of direction, hitting on some talent, and making the right decisions with continuity and consistency. Let's talk the Cleveland Browns. They went 3-13 in 2015. They're the owners of what's the equivalent of two first-round draft picks. They picked 2nd and 32nd because New England lost their first-round pick through the whole Deflategate scandal. Let's give you the tale of the tape. Their offense ranked 25th last year. Passing was 21st, rushing 22nd. Defense was 27th. Pass defense 22nd, rush defense was 30th in the NFL. They're 9th best in terms of salary cap space with an estimated $42 million to spend. But, Jeff, let's start right here with the quarterback situation, which has gone around and around. The Browns have gone through 24 starting quarterbacks since they came back into the league in 1999. They've never come close to a franchise passer. The last 5 years, they've started 10 quarterbacks, including Seneca Wallace, Thad Lewis, Connor Shaw, Austin Davis, Johnny Manziel, Brandon Whedon. Oh, my God, I've just depressed myself with that list. I mean, they've spent first-round picks on Brady Quinn, Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel. This is where quarterbacks have gone to die.
Neil, in the United States, we have a federal organization called OSHA, right? Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And I think they need to go to Cleveland and test the water in that building, because somebody's been putting dumb pills in that water, because this team has had the worst. I'm talking about historically bad first-round draft choices.
Yeah,
and you can go through the last 12 of them. And it's just like miss, oh, my God, a bust, miss. Well, you know, Alex Mack is the one that comes to my mind as a guy that they hit on with a first-round pick. Mm. But you think about Barcavius Mingo, think about Johnny Manziel, and, you know, you all go all the way back to Tim Couch. I mean, it's unbelievable how bad they have been. And multiple general managers,
well,
not just Ray Farmer. I'm talking about multiple general managers go in there and, you know, Mike Lombardi, they just miss after miss after miss.
Well, let's start there, Jeff, then, because the structure of the Browns is something that came up just at the end of the 2015 season. And again, we kind of scoffed a little bit, but Mike Pettin was fired as the head coach. Hugh Jackson comes in as the new coach. Sashi Brown is the head lawyer in the building, is given total control of the 53-man roster. The team also hired Paul DePodesta, who was subject to the Moneyball film, and his approach worked in baseball. He's the chief strategy officer. So at first glance there, you would look at that and you would, again, point a finger at the Cleveland Browns and laugh. But then you might say, well, actually, why not try something different? Because we drafted Justin Gilbert when Odell Beckham was there, and look what's ended up with that. We paid $12 million for Dwayne Bowe, who had 5 catches. Time and time again, we've missed on quarterbacks. So maybe this fresh approach is what the Browns need.
Well, I, you know what? There's something to be said for that, because you look at what they've done historically, and it's not working. I think when you go to this team particularly, right, and you know, it's amazing how, if you've seen the feature that the NFL did on Belichick's 95 team when the Browns left and went to Cleveland, you really get a sense of how that move just absolutely decimated the city. And it's almost like they now carry a curse because of that, the Art Modell curse.
Mm.
But this is what the Browns need. Forget about positions. Forget about quarterbacks. Forget about all that stuff. In my opinion, they need stability. They need a plan. And they need a commitment to that plan. They have been through how many head coaches, Neil?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. But, Jeff, that's why it's ironic. Because Jimmy Haslam was involved with the Steelers before he became the owner of the Browns. You couldn't have more continuity.
And he should understand that better than anybody. And, you know, to me, as you look at Cleveland, and we can talk about the particulars of it, but when you look at Cleveland, to me, this is me, right? And again, certainly I'm not Jimmy Haslam, but I would say I'm going to get rid of all the character issue guys. all the guys with baggage, all the guys that, you know, don't bring me Josh Gordon again. I don't want to see these kinds of guys around here, because we're going to build it on guys that are committed to one another, that believe in team, that care about, that love football. You know, a guy like Joe Thomas is exactly the kind of guys they need. Mm. But there have been too many, you know, and I love Devon Best because he was one of our kids at Hawaii, but, you know, a kid that you bring up from Miami who has great years in Miami and comes and flames out, you know, and can't take care of his business off the field in Cleveland. Josh Gordon, continually in trouble off the field in Cleveland. And yada, yada, yada as you go through it. I mean, just clean that kind of stuff out and just say we're going to commit ourselves to doing it the right way for the long haul. And then I think you got a chance. But if you continue to go back and forth and, you know, take those guys that have, you know, obviously talented guys, but so many off-field issues, so many challenges, you can't, I don't believe you can turn a program that way.
No, Johnny Manziel has had those off-field issues. The Browns have made it clear they're going to release him when the new league year starts on March the 9th. The reason they haven't done it by now is there's a salary cap technicality, means they'll take a financial hit if they do it before the start of the new league year. But Johnny's going to be gone. Josh Gordon is still waiting for reinstatement from the NFL. Looks like they'll probably part company with Dwayne Bowe and Brian Hartline. So they need some receiver help. But I've got this question from the mailbag, Jeff. I'll actually start with this. Aaron Rolls says, are the Browns better served going hard for a free agent like Brock Osweiler or Kirk Cousins, or drafting Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch? So you've already talked a bit about Wentz there. But, you know, I guess you're not going to... Osweiler and Cousins may not be available, but at least you'll know by the time the draft rolls around.
Yeah, and I really believe this. For where they're at right now, okay, Josh McCown can give you a veteran that a young kid can learn from.
Yep.
He's a quality person. He's been in the league. He can help a young kid grow. You don't want, in my opinion, because we've just seen this, and obviously they took a challenge on a character guy too, but when you're a rookie in the NFL at that position and you're on a bad football team, that can ruin a guy that could be a player.
Mm.
So my recommendation would be let McCown continue to be there. Take the best quarterback that you have available to grow. And there are three of them, like you mentioned in the draft. There's three guys that are pretty much, I don't know if there's a guy that's head and shoulders above the other two, right? So if you feel like one of those guys can be a guy going forward, and Pep Hamilton, the new offensive coordinator, is going to have to decide that along with you, then take him and let him learn behind Josh for a season or two seasons while you're growing your football team. Mm. Don't put him out there and get him confused and hit and frustrated, and then all of a sudden you end up with a guy that's damaged, psychologically damaged, because he played too early. I think this is again what I'm preaching in Cleveland. Patience, build it, grow it correctly, do everything the right way. There's still no guarantees, but I think that gives you a better chance than just saying we're going to take the best quarterback available with the second pick and throw him out there and let him sink or swim. I don't know if that's a good plan.
And maybe if you get that continuity and that approach, Jeff, A, you'll be able to spend some of that $42 million because you can entice people to come into your building. But I think the problem with the Browns that I see as well, you know, we can get into the nitty-gritty of the roster, but just look at in the Premier League, we have buying clubs and we have selling clubs. The Browns are a selling club. You know, they cannot keep hold of their talent. TJ Ward is playing lights-out football for the Denver Broncos now and winning a Super Bowl ring. He was with the Cleveland Browns. Tashaun Gibson is preparing to move on at safety. Last year alone, they lost to Tyber Rubin, who ended up in Seattle, Buster Screen, who was still a very good cornerback for the New York Jets, and Jabal Sheard for New England. I mean, they cannot keep... And now Alex Mack might end up leaving as well. They almost traded away Joe Thomas.
Well, and I think that's still a possibility of happening because, you know, if you're going to have, and like Joe Thomas is, I'm not saying Joe Thomas is a Hall of Fame player. I don't know that.
Right.
Joe Thomas is a perennial Pro Bowl left tackle who's tough and never misses games and all of that stuff. But in the reality of the Cleveland situation, what can you get right now because Joe Thomas is at the end of his career. What can you get right now for him that could help you in the long haul? Mm. Those are the decisions that you have to make. And it's interesting you mentioned the Moneyball situation. And for the fans out there that aren't familiar with it, the Oakland A's are a small revenue baseball team. And they don't have the wherewithal to compete against the Yankees. Baseball's a little bit like the Premiership, where, you know, it's not equivalent what teams can spend. But they were able to go to the World Series and have great success with a bunch of overlooked, you know, guys that were more productive than the dollars that you put into them, players. They scoured the league for those kinds of bets. This may be a money ball situation here. Do you give up basically and it's hard to say your left tackle is your face, your franchise, but I really think Joe Thomas is, to get draft picks or players, young players, that will help fit the many needs that you have?
Well, Jeff,
that's an interesting question.
That is a good point, because, you know, Joe Thomas is that cornerstone that you can build an offensive line around. But the offensive line last year, even with Joe Thomas, gave up the second most sacks in the NFL with 53, and they allowed the most quarterback hits, 123. So you could argue, well, we were pretty bad there anyway. We might as well see what else we can get. And Joe Thomas is probably at the stage of his career where, had that trade happened to Denver mid-season in 2015, he would have been open to that deal, because then he's got a shot to play for a championship.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, for him, it's just like Alex Mack. How can you give up that many sacks and have two Pro Bowlers on the offensive line?
I know. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's almost like it doesn't make sense. But that's Cleveland right now. So you can't get anything for Alex Mack if he opts out of his contract. But in Joe Thomas's case, that's a guy that you could get assets back for.
Mm.
Draft picks, young players at other positions, whatever it is that you feel you need. And again, that also will create what for you, Neil? Cap space.
Yeah.
And cap space allows you to go out and get creatives. Here's the reality of dealing in Cleveland's situation when you're talking about free agents. You're going to have to overpay to get good players.
Yep.
Right? Where, for example, if you're Denver, or your New England, or your Green Bay even, or Seattle, or, you know, Cardinals, or Carolina, or any of the teams that are perceived as knocking on the door to go to the Super Bowl, players will go there, particularly late in their career, for discounted, if you want to consider it discounts, discounted salaries, because they want that chance to be champions.
Mm.
Where if you're at Cleveland or Tennessee or these kinds of teams, you got to pay extra because players know they're going to go in there and they're going to lose football games, and nobody wants to lose.
No, then it's a business deal for the player, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it becomes about, okay, it's all about the dollars now, and it's not about the W's, because you know the W's are just frankly not going to be there for a while.
A couple of high points on offense, then we'll move on to, I thought Travis Benjamin started fast and then he faded a little bit, Jeff, but he's indicating that he's probably going to try and re-sign with the Cleveland Browns. Gary Barnage, I thought, was a poor man's Gronkowski. I thought he had a career year and he got a contract extension. But then after that, you know, in training camp, I remember reading Wilbert Montgomery, the running backs coach, he called out the running backs and said, nobody seems to want this job. And I actually think that was the way it was all year long, whether it was, you know, Isaiah Crowell or Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson actually was more of a receiver than a running back. But, you know, there's not a huge amount in terms of the skill position players. You're probably outside of Barnage and Benjamin at the moment.
No, there isn't. And again, you know, again, we talk about these, you know, bottom feeding teams in the National Football League. You're talking about multiple needs.
Mm.
You know, again, we already touched on the quarterback thing. You know, again, you look at wide receiver. Wide receiver fascinates me at Cleveland. Really, they've done nothing at the position from a draft standpoint, Neil, for the last 5 years to really help themselves, right? And then, like you said, you go out and get Dwayne Bowe. He catches five balls, and you pay him how much? I don't know how many millions he got per catch, but that's a pretty good year, you know. And you got Josh Gordon, who can't help himself, you know, off the field. So Ray Farmer really, really, really put that franchise back a long way when you start talking about receiver. And then, you know, on the other side of the football, you look at them, and they're pass rushers.
Oh.
I mean, they spend a lot of money a couple years ago to go get Paul Kruger from Baltimore, and he really hasn't lit it up either. I think he had 2.5 sacks last year.
Yep.
So, you know, that's money that they've spent and not gotten production back for it. They can't rush the passer. They can't stop the run. They got Danny Shelton inside and nobody else.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a bad recipe.
Jeff, you mentioned Barkevious Mingo a few minutes ago. He had 3 sacks in his first 3 NFL games. He's got 4 in his last 43. And I guess the hope there is that, well, Ray Horton is back, isn't he? I mean, does that make a difference as defensive coordinator? I mean, that's literally you're clinging to hope, aren't you?
If I ask you, right, we're gonna play a little game here. Neil, there's a team in the NFL that fires a defensive coordinator and continues to pay him because of the offset situation that the NFL has, where, for example, if you're a coordinator, and I'm going to throw numbers, you're making $500,000, $500,000 a year, but then I fire you and you go to another team and you become a position coach and you're making $300,000 a year, I'm still on the hook, as long as your contract lasts, for the $200,000, the offset, what's called the offset.
Right? Yep.
What NFL franchise would fire a defensive coordinator, continue to pay him his offset, and then rehire him back?
I think I read, this is the Cleveland Browns, but didn't I read that they're still paying, in addition to this coaching staff now, they're paying 2 other coaching staffs still because of the constant change.
Exactly. I mean, so they fire Ray Horton. He goes away to Tennessee. They pay the offset. He comes back, and they, I mean, it's just like, it could only be one team.
Oh.
I mean, it could. So if you're a Brown fan, and the Browns fans are phenomenal fans, Neil.
Yeah, they deserve
better. Phenomenal fans. When I lived in Las Vegas, there was a Browns bar that when you went on Sunday, you thought you were sitting in the dog pound at Memorial Stadium. I mean, it was amazing in there. I mean, they'd be packed to the rafters, everybody wearing their Browns gear. They got the dog mask on, throwing dog biscuits around the bar. That's in Las Vegas. I mean, that's how passionate Browns fans are everywhere. And they just continue, the team just continues to beat them to death with what they do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I sometimes ask you that arrow up, arrow down question. I guess we don't know until we see what the new management structure does, but you just with the Browns, you've got to wait and be shown it now, haven't we, Jeff? It's just been too many years of madness.
Well, it's almost like there can't be any worse. You can't, how much further can, how, I mean, you can't dig any deeper.
Hmm.
I think they've gotten to, you know, if let me just say it this. If they had started shoveling in Cleveland when this whole thing started, they would be in Shanghai right now. That's how far down they've gone. So, I mean, it can't get any worse. It's got to go up in Cleveland. And I'm hopeful because I love the fans there. And you know, I listen to Cleveland Talk Radio here, and you know, they just constantly looking for a ray of sunshine. It's like that old saying about, you know, I see light at the end of the tunnel and it's an oncoming train. they can't find anything that seems to be good for them. But I'm hopeful. I'm not giving up.
No, there you go. That's cheered up all the Browns fans in the UK on this Tuesday afternoon in February. Let's move on to our final state of the franchise. It's the San Diego Chargers. So the tale of the tape. They had their worst season since 2003. They finished with a 4-12 record. Offense was ranked 9th in the NFL. So here's a difference to those other two. The other two have got low offensive rankings. Offense was 9th. Passing attack was 4th. Rushing was 31st. But defense was 20th. They were 14th against the pass. 27th against the run. They've got the 13th best salary cap situation. They've got about $32 million to spend, but they've got more than 20 players set to hit free agency. So there's some management decisions to be made here, Jeff, before they get into too far into the offseason.
No question. And when you went through the tail of the tape, and I appreciate you doing that, because if you're listening, fans, what's the first thing that you see? is you got such an imbalance in their offense. Even though their offense was so, you know, was productive, 320 points, you know, again, you'd say you can live with that. Bottom line is they don't run the football.
No.
And they're putting so much pressure on Phillip Rivers and that passing game. I just really think they've got to get some balance in their, you know, in their approach. And, you know, interestingly now, Ken Whisenhunt, you know, hopefully can find a way to get Melvin Gordon going. He's not a, you know, he's not a shotgun flatback, what we call flatback zone running tail, you know, back. And I think he's like DeMarco Murray. You got to get him in the pistol. You got to get him in the eye. You got to let him see and let him run downhill. And I still think that kid can be a player. But, you know, right now they've got to get balance in their running attack.
Yeah, offensive line was an issue. They had a revolving door, really. So many injuries. And you mentioned Melvin Gordon. He had 32 touchdowns in his final college season. Couldn't manage one in the pros in 217 touches. So, you know, maybe part of that is the offensive line. I know he had some fumbling issues. But, Jeff, when we look at Phillip Rivers, I'm going to say this. I think, you know, he dealt with injuries up front on his offensive line. No running game to speak of. And I've said this before, there's parts of Phillip Rivers' game that kind of remind me of Dan Marino, not just because he looks a little bit gimpy when he runs and, you know, he's not always looking perfect in terms of his drop back and, you know, he is no threat to carry the football. But when I look back on Marino's career now and I see in my mind's eye so many great comebacks, so many times it was all on him, and Miami wasted Dan Marino's best years and didn't get him back to a Super Bowl. And I think when Phillip Rivers is all said and done, we'll say there was a really, really talented quarterback and his team, or his franchise, didn't give him the best chance to do what others in his class have done, what Eli Manning has done, what Big Ben has done. I would take Phillip Rivers in terms of being able to produce like those two, but he just hasn't had the help and he's not really had a genuine Super Bowl chance. Yes, they've got into the playoffs and, you know, but I just don't feel like we've seen a lot of Rivers' talent wasted.
You know, it's really sad too, because not only is he a great talent, he's a great, great competitor. I mean, an elite level competitor. Mm. And, you know, like Marino. And, you know, there are some similarities. They're beat up now. They're at the end of their career. They still make plays just because they're smart and tough and have great arms. Both of them had, you know, Marino had that really quick delivery, but the ball came out low like it does with Phillip. But again, it's sad to me because so many times everything in San Diego is put on his shoulders in terms of winning football games. And that's tough. You just can't do that to a guy. And you know, especially in this day and age where defensive coordinators know if you can't run the football, then they don't have to defend it. And now they're spending their time, you know, getting blitzes to you because you can't get away from pressure. And they don't, you know, I don't think they're elite outside of receiver either. He makes those guys better than they are, frankly.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue, isn't it, Jeff? You got Keenan Allen coming. Yeah. You got Keenan Allen coming off a nasty lacerated kidney injury. Then, other than that, it's Stevie Johnson, Dontrell Inman, and Malcolm Floyd's probably going to retire. So they need to upgrade there, don't they?
No question. I mean, Stevie Johnson has been kind of a hit and miss guy his whole career. Dontrell Inman is 27. Started his career up here in the Canadian Football League. He played at Toronto. And he's a good player, but he's not an elite-level guy. Dontrell Inman isn't that guy that's going to scare you on defense and where you go, oh, my God, how are we going to cover that guy? So you look around, and he gets an awful lot out of guys. Even though Antonio Gates at one time was an elite-level tight end, he's 35 years old. Mm. This team, Neil, has right now 10 players over 30 years old on their roster, and that's telling. Yeah. When you're 4-12 and you've got 10 guys over 30 years old.
Well, it is, because I started to jot down a few things that they'd need, Jeff, team needs, and I got up to about 10 different positions, and it was on both sides of the ball. I mean, this is a team, I mean, I know it's not all about star power, but this is a team where you'd actually struggle to list a big, long list of stars on this team. They have multiple needs, as you'd expect with a 4-12 club. Rivers probably made them look more competitive than they should have been, but they've certainly got concerns, you know. And on defense, I like Melvin Ingram. I thought he was, you know, finally got Finally got that sort of pass rushing off the edge that we expected from him. But, you know, again, there's not a huge amount there to work with. And Eric Weddle's going to go. He's completely fallen out with the team. He's going to go at safety. So, you know, this, you don't want to say it's all definitely a long road back, because a quarterback like Rivers gives you a chance every week. But, he's not working with a talented roster at the moment.
No, he's not. And again, so you say, where is the need, right? So let's use any of the ones that we talked about, right? Say, for example, offensive line. They'll get a good offensive lineman if they pick at three, right? You got to believe. Now, it may not be Tunsil, but there's a kid named Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame, a left tackle that I watched on tape the other day against University of Virginia. Mm. And he's really athletic and really a good player. He was the Polynesian College Football Player of the Year. He's long. He's got great feet. He's a left tackle. You know, there's no question he's going to be a good pro. Mm. And you'll probably have access to one of those two guys in the first three picks. But look at the needs. Where do you go? I mean, also think about this, Neil. This is a quarterback-dependent team.
Yes.
That has a 12-year veteran in Rivers backed up by a 10-year veteran in Kellen Clemens. So, you know, what's your future?
Mm, you got it.
I mean, what is your future? And realistically, even if you have a great draft and you spend all kind of money, they got, what, $30 million, I guess, in cap space. But even if you do all that, are you going to fill enough holes to say, well, we don't need to draft a quarterback for the future? If one of those three quarterbacks, which one of them will be available to you on the third pick, you know, this is a, they've got – Tom Telesco has a lot of questions to answer. And, you know, this is a team. How long are we going to be in San Diego? Are we moving to L.A.? Yeah. Losing teams have all this drama swirling around them all the time. And, you know, teams that win typically, you don't have that kind of, you know, everything is a crisis all the time. I agree with you totally on where their need areas are.
Would you contemplate a quarterback at some point? Maybe not third overall, but.
Well, you know, you gotta think about it, right? I mean, you gotta think about it, because who's gonna take this thing after Philip decides he's had enough, right? And you know, and he's a tough sucker, Neil. But he's been in the league 12 years. He's been hit an awful lot. You know, he's had, you know, how many knee surgeries? I mean, at some point, he's gonna have to. You're gonna have to have another guy. And if you don't have one, now you go back into that black hole that some of the teams in the NFL are dealing with, where you just don't have a quarterback.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how good you are at other positions. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win consistently in this league.
No, I think for San Diego, you've got the quarterback for now, so you do everything to protect him. Joe Barksdale at right tackle is a free agent. Do you try and re-sign him? King Dunlap is not the answer at left tackle. Get him some more receiver help. Let's go all in for Philip Rivers for a couple of years. Anything else on the Chargers before I take a couple of questions out of the mailbag, Jeff?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at it, you say the Chargers, you know, defensive line, for example, you look at them and you go, boy, Corey Leggett's about what they got,
yeah,
right? And you got an end. You took Manti Te'o a couple years ago in the draft. Manti is a good football player, but he's not one of those big physical inside backers that doesn't, you know, that can knock guards off of him and knock centers off him. He has to be protected. So I think there's a big need inside for a presence inside.
Mm.
And then you look at the back end, and you're going to have to get both safeties replaced. And you know, again, they got one corner that can play right now, and I just really think this is a long-term project in San Diego.
Yeah, certainly feels that way. Let's take one question from the mailbag, and then we'll wrap up, Jeff. This comes from Simon Doig, and it goes back to the combine. He says, will the combine determine which quarterback is drafted first, or will tape footage be the key?
The combine, but more importantly, the individual pro day workouts and the individual workouts that these quarterbacks will get, because the combine doesn't allow, for example, all the quarterback coaches, the offensive coordinator, general managers, they'll all be sitting in the stands watching very closely how these guys throw the ball, and they'll tape it all, and they'll go back and they'll go through the tape over and over and over and over again. But what they'll really want is that hands-on, on the field, individual time to work the player out. And that's where, if you're going to draft a quarterback, and I'll tell you a story about when I was at SMU, I got a call from Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, and he said, Jeff, can we get your field tomorrow? And I said, let me check. But they wanted the stadium. They didn't want our practice field. They wanted the stadium so that they could lock the doors and nobody could see inside. Nobody could come in.
Yep.
And they showed up the next morning, and it was Jay Gruden, who was coaching quarterbacks at the time. It was Marvin. It was the receiver coach. It was, all but the offensive line coach. Their entire offensive staff was there. And it was Christian Ponder that they were working out.
Okay.
And Marvin let me, go out there with them as they worked the kid out. I'm going to tell you, they had the kid out there for 2 hours and just about killed him. I mean, he threw a million balls.
Huh.
And, they did they put him through all kind of physical tests and, all this stuff, things that, what a quarterback coach would do, individual drills. And interestingly enough, didn't draft him, went a different way and got Andy Dalton. But it was fun to watch that experience and just see how detailed they were in everything that they asked that kid to do and how they put him under pressure. And they tired him out and asked him to do things that he hadn't done before and give him information back that they had, they told him about a route. They wanted a route run this specific way, and this was your hot, and da 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 da. Then they worked him real hard, so he was physically tired. And about 5 minutes later, came back and asked him to repeat what they said to see if he had been able to process the information. It was fascinating.
It was
really fascinating.
Yeah,
that's just the kind of individual workouts that happen when you're, dealing with the most important position on the field.
Absolutely. There'd be no stone left unturned as we move towards the NFL draft in Chicago, April 28th to the 30th. That's it for this week on Inside the Huddle in association with skysports.com and NFL UK. Next week, we're going to continue our State of the Franchise series. We'll be looking at Dallas, Jacksonville, and Baltimore. So until next week, good to be back talking football, Coach.
Hey, it always is great talking football with the fans in the UK. And again, we'll be on the road next week working out free agents. So I will probably talk to you. I think Tuesday is Miami, if I'm not mistaken. So that's not all bad.
That's not bad, is it? I'll try and get in a storeroom then, or get in a store cupboard or something if you're near the beach.
But wait a second. You were in San Moritz or wherever you were last week, so you're one up on me right now.
That's true. So until next week, when Jeff might have his toes in the sand, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.